Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel.
Our guest today is Grant Hill, who is an analyst for Turner and CBS. He is on the Players Only Night NBA broadcast on Monday nights on TNT, which just started this year. And he's also on the top team in the NCAA tournament on CBS alongside Jim Nantz and Bill Raftery. Grant, real quick, what's your Final Four?
Well, you know, it's a good question. I think it's hard to really pick who you might have. I mean, I think there's been a lot of parity this year in college basketball. And, you know, it's interesting when you haven't really gone through yet and sort of filled out the bracket, so to speak. We did our Big Ten Conference Championship yesterday, and then we had a quick hit for the selection show, hop on a plane, and now sort of in information sort of gathering mode for the 8 teams that will have the first week in Indianapolis. So I haven't really technically gone through and filled out. But I do think as I sort of glance, you know, I like Kansas in the Midwest. I do like North Carolina in the South. I like Arizona in the West. And you know, I think Duke, Villanova. I mean, I'd say before last week I would have gone with Villanova. But I think what Duke was able to accomplish in the ACC tournament and really seems to be peaking right now at the right time. So, you know, sort of a quick glance, that's what I would say, but I'm known to change my mind between now and when we really get things going, on Thursday.
It's obviously no secret that you went to Duke. You left there in 1994. Could you fathom at that point that Coach K would A, still be there now, and B, be in the conversation for taking them for yet another national championship?
You know, at the time, I think, you know, we had a great run when I was there. He had a great sort of build up and run prior to me arriving. I don't think at 21 years of age, I really, you know, understood or even thought that he would be coaching almost 25 years later. And really just the model of consistency and the model of sort of consistent excellence that he, you know, that he has been able to accomplish with that program. I don't think anyone could have seen that. And for him to continue and have a great team and still be relevant and still being able to recruit great players and continuing to have those types of expectations is really quite remarkable.
Grayson Allen came under a lot of fire both this year and last for a series of tripping incidents. And then it took him several weeks after that to find his head. Do you think that that story was overcovered by the media or properly covered?
You know, I mean, I think it was overblown. I mean, I think, you know, Grayson Allen obviously, you know, made a mistake, was penalized for it. But I think we live in a sort of a 24-hour news cycle in the world of sports. I thought it was a little bit over-sensationalized. And we forget, I mean, these kids, you know, they're kids. They're amateurs. They're not professionals. And, you know, I think people started to question Coach K, and I'm like, look, first of all, you know, Coach K has proven his track record. Whether you like Duke or you don't like Duke, I think you have to respect what he's been able to do and accomplish. And, you know, he's a teacher, you know, like just like a Tom Izzo, just like a lot of these coaches, they're teachers of young men. And I know from playing for Coach K that he is more demanding of himself, of his staff, and most importantly, of his players. And he expects nothing but excellence on and off the court from his players. And so, you know, I knew because I'm sort of a bit of an insider and having played there, that he was doing all he could to not just discipline him, but also to help him. And so much is overblown. And I think part of that is Duke. You know, I think Duke, the program, the success it's had, I think people, you know, good and bad, want to focus on both. And, you know, I just think we sometimes forget that this guy's a kid. He didn't do anything illegal. He didn't break the law. You know, he's a great kid, and he's sort of been painted the villain. And then, and not just that. I mean, look, I understand he had a couple incidents last year. He had the one this year. You know, and you know, needed to be held accountable for that, which he was. But it then it became like this witch hunt. Like every time, you know, he went to the hole and something happened, everyone just overblew it and blew it out of control. And so I'm just glad that nothing else has occurred. I'm glad that that incident, plus Coach K's health, plus the injuries they had at the beginning of the season, all that adversity now appears to be behind them. And I think they've gotten stronger. I think, you know, they went through some tough times this year as a group and as a unit. And you know what? They've survived it, and I think it's made them, it's galvanized them, it's brought them together, and they're now playing their best basketball at the right time of the season.
Another player who's been a lot of chatter about in the 24-hour sports news cycle is Lonzo Ball. A lot of people have been comparing him to somebody you came into the NBA draft with, Jason Kidd, except for that Ball also has a better jumper. Do you see the Kidd-Ball comparisons, or do you think that there's somebody else that Lonzo Ball reminds you more of?
Well, I mean, we always like to compare, you know, and you know, I think they both look. I mean, Jason Kidd was unbelievable as a freshman and was a Hall of Famer. I mean, and may not have been as good a shooter, but was just so dominant and beat us at Duke my junior year when he was a freshman. So, but, you know, they both have a great feel. They both, you know, have a motor. They love to pass and facilitate. Jason might have been a little bit bigger in terms of his physicality. But, you know, he's, you know, sort of a breath of fresh air. I think he... and what he has done this season, and certainly what UCLA has done, you know, Arizona playing great, Oregon. I mean, the West now has some teams now, good teams, capable teams, and some good players, you know. And so Lonzo Ball, he has been fun to watch, and he has, you know, been one of the big-time names that has emerged in this year's freshman class. And I know that he and Steve Alford and the rest of the group there, they're going to try to position themselves for a long, deep postseason run here in the tournament.
Your Turner colleague, Charles Barkley, has been pretty critical of Lonzo's father, LeVar Ball. Your father was not anything like what LeVar Ball is like in terms of the way that he would, like, your father wouldn't have gone and said that you were going to be better than the reigning NBA MVP, but he was out there publicly, especially by virtue of his being a former NFL star. As you watch the relationship with LeVar and the three Ball kids, how do you feel? Do you think that he should be as outspoken as he is, or do you think that it might be better for his sons if he took a step back and was less in the spotlight?
Well, first of all, with my dad, nobody asked my dad, and my dad didn't have the platform to really say what he thought. You know, they didn't have the social media and the internet back then, and who knows what my father would have said, although I don't think that was necessarily his style. But, you know, I don't see a problem with it. I mean, I think, you know, I think of fathers, first of all, I think the image of a dad, you know, here's an African-American father who is basically singing the praises of his child. And he's got a good kid who's a good student. It appears to be a model citizen, a great basketball player, plays the right way, and a father who is there, supportive, encouraging, and really, you know, endorsing the greatness of his son. I like that. I don't see it that much different than Richard Williams, you know, and he, when Venus and Serena were young, and he told everybody they were going to be great. Earl Woods, you know, was the father of obviously Tiger Woods. And I think, you know, much like, you know, LeVar Ball and Richard Williams kind of shocked the establishment by, you know, being such an advocate for his son. And then I even think in a different way, but very similar, I think Archie Manning, who he himself was a great football player and really, you know, sort of helped set the stage in a different way and at a different time for his sons, Eli Manning and Peyton Manning. And the interesting thing was all the fathers in those cases were right. You know, their children went on to be great and some of the best to ever do it, you know, in their respective sports. And so, you know, I kind of have a feeling that LeVar Ball might be right in some ways. I think he's more sort of a reflection of the current world we're in, where now you have social media. Now, you know, families and players are more aware of the branding and understand, you know. And so it's just, it's a different time, which, you know, he has a bigger platform. But I think there's a lot of similarities to those examples that I just shared with you. And so, and you know what? Like I said, the kid backed it up. He's played well. He's you know, people are talking about him. It's not like he's got a manufacturer hype, the father. I mean, his play has already done that. And so, you know, I love it, and I love the kid's game, and I want to see and look forward to seeing, you know, seeing his game progress and evolve. And you know, I don't want to project too far ahead into the future. I want to give respect to the college game. And to this tournament, but this kid's got tremendous upside, and will be playing basketball for many, many years.
During your Grayson Allen answer, you mentioned amateurism. Back when you were playing, it wasn't uncommon for people like you or Christian Laettner or Danny Manning or Tim Duncan to stay all 4 years. But now, with like both the injury risk and like the guaranteed NBA contracts and the necessity to get into your second NBA contract, it's extremely rare for a player of somebody who's like your caliber to even stay for 2 or 3 years. Do you think that maybe some more great players would stay in college basketball if they were allowed to get endorsement money? And would you be in favor of something like the Olympic model where they're amateur athletes, but they're allowed to have individual sponsorships, or do you prefer the current system where they're on scholarship, they get small stipends, they get their meals, but they're not able to make money beyond that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to be careful when you start, you know, talking about endorsements and things of that nature in college. You know, I don't know if the NCAA necessarily needs to change their model. I know it's a hot button topic. And I don't pretend to know all the details on that. I will say, though, that I do think twofold. One, the NBA, you have players coming in on potential, and not all of those players realize their potential. And, you know, I get the idea of leaving early, the pressure to leave early, the expectation to leave early, but not every kid is ready. And not every kid is ready to come in and be a Kevin Durant and be a star right away. And I also think, too, you know, I think, you know, as it pertains to the college game, you know, you don't have those connections with players. Guys, great players who play for 4 years, you know, we still talk about them years later. You still talk about a Danny Manning almost 30 years later. People remember his legacy, his championships, his you know, the 100-plus games he played in. You know, if he was only there at Kansas 1 year, you might not have that same, you know, that same sort of view and just, you know, respect for his game. You know, look at the documentaries made on the Fab Five, on Duke, on Leitner, on UNLV. I mean, those were a time where people remember those teams. They played multiple years together. You saw the journey. You know, you knew the narrative. And you're not going to, you know, what teams and players today are you going to remember 10, 20 years from now? So it's an interesting issue. You know, I think not everyone is ready to move on. And a lot of guys that played in last year's tournament, a lot of players who left early and entered into the NBA draft are playing in the D League or playing overseas right now.
You mentioned the Fab Five documentary. At the time, you were pretty upset at some of the comments that Jalen Rose made about Duke in there. Have you talked to him since then and like reached a mutual understanding, or is that something that still weighs at you a little bit?
No, I mean, look, we talked. He's apologized and apologized to my family for just, you know, the thing that I think, you know, was a concern is not so much how we felt. You know, people don't realize, I mean, back then teams didn't like each other, you know, and a lot of times guys on various teams didn't know each other. And so obviously Michigan didn't like us. I don't know if we really looked at Michigan that way. We didn't like Carolina. I mean, that was the team that we hated. And you know, North Carolina was sort of the gold standard. They had great success. Dean Smith, you know, Coach K was trying to reach that level. And in the state of North Carolina, you know, it was all Tar Heels. And Duke was an afterthought. Even on campus, I mean, you know, I would say Duke was one of the largest employers, was the largest employer in the city of Durham. And so you're on campus and people who worked at the school would care a lot of things. And so we had just, you know, a hatred for them. So that wasn't totally uncommon. But no, I mean, look, you know, we were all young. We were competing. You know, you know, we're all good now. Weber was a great friend of mine. And, you know, he came on a visit to Duke. We, you know, had a great visit when he was considering colleges. Would have been interesting if he had chosen to come. But no, we compete, and the good thing is that, you know, as men, we can resolve our conflict, shake hands, and keep it moving.
The big story in the NBA right now is what they're going to do about all of these players getting rested. There's really no way of knowing whether kind of modern resting methods could have possibly elongated your playing career, but I'd be interested to know how you come in on things like Steve Kerr sitting all his players on a national TV game on Saturday night, or what Popovich has been doing for years, given that when you played, it was pretty common for players to play whenever they were physically able to.
Well, I mean, you can even go further back. I remember as a Lakers fan back in the 80s, you know, Pat Riley resting his guys, you know, leading into the playoffs. I think it, you know, it depends on what teams are in that position. You know, Golden State, San Antonio, Cleveland, the Spurs, you know, the Lakers back in the day. I mean, these are teams that are trying to play till June. And so there's a real, and have a realistic chance of competing for a championship. So, you know, you sometimes have to have that big picture perspective. Look, I mean, I wish, you know, in some respects, I wish, you know, that was more of the mindset when I was playing, particularly when I first got hurt. You know, when I was playing in the late 90s, it was almost, you know, it was almost like it was frowned upon to sit out. And if anything, you were influenced and expected to play, you know, regardless. And now there's a huge emphasis on resting. You know, at first I was kind of against that. I was against it just as an old school guy. I always felt like playing was a badge of honor, you know, getting through, like not sitting was something, you know, Michael Jordan, you know, he never sat, you know, he played in every game, you know, if you look at his games, I mean, the amount of games he missed throughout his career, he very rarely missed any. And so that was sort of the spirit and the mindset, but, you know, we know more now. You know, we're educated now on this, and we understand the importance of recovery, nutrition, all these things that, you know, weren't necessarily a part of the NBA 20 years ago. And ultimately, you know, as an NBA owner, vice chairman of the Atlanta Hawks, and certainly having guys and wanting them to be at their best, you know, you understand sort of the big picture perspective and preserving players. And so I've warmed up to the idea, and I'm not against it. It's going to happen. And, you know, the most important precious resource that the NBA has are its players. And so I think it's good that we're starting to emphasize the importance of taking care of them.
I know you've got to be running. Is there anything we didn't talk about with either the college basketball or NBA landscape that you think is like really important and you want to discuss on this platform?
No, I mean, I think we covered a lot, and I mean, I feel good if you feel good.
All right, thank you very much, Grant. Great luck in the NCAA tournament and the rest of this NBA season. We definitely appreciate your time, and good luck again in the preparations for the gauntlet you're about to go through with the broadcasting.
Okay, thank you.